You may be seated.
We made your work easy this morning, Todd. We didn't know what to do with such a short verse, but that is the emphasis of our lesson. Jesus' work and how he managed time. It's good that you're with us. We're certainly glad to have each one of you. We have visitors present, and we are thankful that you have come to worship the Lord with us. We're gearing up toward giveaway day coming up soon, and so be preparing for that. Of course, October is where we try to sack the pulpit, and so make effort to help us finish that off. That is the last thing, as well as coats that we're trying together. And giveaway day is November the 9th this year. And we're also changing up, you might notice, our fall activity we call Trunk or Treat and Chili Supper. And this year we decided to do it on Halloween evening, that actual holiday, and it will be on Thursday. And we wanted to make this an outreach, as it always has been an outreach, but we wanted to try to increase that effort. And we're not just trying to give kids candy, we're trying to reach out to families and share our church with those of our community. And so if you have families and friends, invite them to come be with us. Of course, there's a lot of activities going on that evening. They can come here for the chili supper beginning at 6. We're just going to have the chili supper going from about 6 to about 7:30, and then we'll have a bonfire, and we're going to hope to have a place for the kids to jump and play. And then at about 7:30, from about 7:30 to 8, the Trunk or Treat will be open. Now, of course, in order to make this work, we need you to come. If you don't have kids and things, come and bring your car or truck and set it up over here and be able to help give out candy. And then come and enjoy the meal with us and the activities. And so, it's our first time to try it like this, and we'll see how it goes. And we hope that it will be a blessing for our church family. We struggle with managing time. And in some ways, as we think about time management, it really kind of, we often think about, at least I do because of the situation I'm in, we think about young families, we think about not having enough time, and it seems like even those who are older or still working and things often talk a lot how they don't have enough time. And then I even know many of you who are retired to say, after you retired, you got busier than you even were when you were working. You don't know how you ever got anything done before you retired because it seems like your days are so filled up now. But then I think about some of the other people I go visit who are in a condition where they are homebound or they are in a nursing home or a residential care facility. And they talk to me about the other opposite part of the problem, and that is they have too much time, and it seems like time is often an enemy of causing them to feel loneliness and despair at times. And then kids live in the always present. It's like they have no concept of time and don't really even grasp time. The lesson this morning is focused around how Jesus managed time. And really what I want to think about is this concept of life management. It's not really about time management as much as it is about life management. And us trying to understand how we manage our life. And life is really a series of choices that we make and then the consequences that those choices have. And so what I want to give you, and I want to first be the first to admit that the six principles that I'm going to share with you later on today are things that I'm trying to apply to my life, and I haven't fully done them yet. And I think that the application is going to be weak in this sermon. And that's always the thing that's difficult in sermons, because it requires you to actually do that for yourself. And I want you to, if you don't have an outline, you may want to jot these down in some way. And I want you to think about, over the next few weeks, how you need to apply these principles of how Jesus managed his life to your life. And I believe that these are some principles that we're always going to be making correction and adjustment over years with. I got these principles originally from Mike Winkler in a lesson he gave for preachers on how we should manage our time. Notice, first of all, before we look at those six, that Jesus had time for everything that was needed. When you think about Jesus' life, he had time for himself. We see him withdrawing and praying
with his relationship with God. He had time to nourish his relationship with God. He had time to nourish his own relationship for his life. We see him as a young child growing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. He had time to nourish and take care of himself. We don't see Jesus being malnourished or not taking time to eat and replenish himself. We see Jesus not being overly tired and anxious with life because he hasn't rested or slept in a long period of time. You see, Jesus took care of himself. But we also know that Jesus made time for God. And we see his relationship with God throughout developed in his prayer life and how he made time for prayer. And then we see that Jesus had time for a social life. Like us last night, many of us, we went to a wedding. Jesus went to a wedding in John chapter 2. And the weddings then lasted much longer than our weddings. Weddings might have lasted for a weekend or sometimes even for longer periods of time. Jesus went and spent some time socially. But then we also find out later in that chapter, John chapter 2, that he's going to go and spend some time with his family. After the wedding, he leaves. And he spends a lot of time with just his disciples and his family. Just with them. And then we see him developing relationships with others. For example, in John 11, verse 35, Jesus wept. And then the next verse, it says, the Jews commented, see how much he loved him. And the idea is, Jesus loved Lazarus very much. Well, why did he love him? Why? Because Jesus had nurtured and spent time in these relationships with Mary and Martha and Lazarus. You see, he made time for that relationship and for friendships. And then finally, we see him in his work. In the Gospel of John, I want to notice a few passages. John chapter 4, in verse 34, Jesus would tell his apostles on this occasion, listen, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. And then the passage that Todd read, John chapter 9, verse number 4, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day, for the night is coming when no one can work. And finally, John chapter 17, Jesus prays, and once again, verse number 4, I glorified you on earth, having accomplished the work that you gave me to do. Jesus says, I've got work to do. The night's coming when I can't get it done. I've got to work. And then when he's praying there before he is going to be crucified, he says, God, I have finished, accomplished the work. And so Jesus had time. You know, it seems that we tend to get into excuses. And we'll often say, well, I just hadn't had time to pray. Hadn't had time to read my Bible. Well, I don't have time to come to worship. Or I don't have time to be with my family. I don't have time to go and spend an afternoon with my kids and do some things with them, go fishing or spend some time with them. Or we say, well, you know, I don't have time to go and see my parents. Or I don't have time to go visit an aunt who's in the nursing home. We say, well, I don't have time for a social life. Or I don't have time because I'm working all the time. You see, Jesus managed his life so that he was able to see that everything had time for what was needed. And I believe he did that through these six things that I want to draw from his life. Six lessons from Jesus on how to manage our lives. The first lesson is this. Jesus understood the value of time. He understood the value of time. In John chapter 9, verse number 4, passage that we've already read, notice that it says, we must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Because night comes. He understands that time is limited. That we have a limited number of hours, a limited number of minutes, and even in a sense, a limited number of days. And even years in our life. In Ephesians chapter 5, 16, and in Colossians chapter 4, verse 5, Paul would write, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Some translations say, making the best use of time. We have to learn to value our time to make the best use out of the time that we've been given. When you think about our life, we understand, and as you get older, people tell me that time goes faster the older you get. And I'm learning that that's very true, isn't it? The time does seem to speed up. And it used to be that when you were a kid, you know, it seemed like Christmas was forever. And I remember thinking I would never turn 16 so I could drive. And now it's like Christmas rolls around like months used to roll around. It seems that time continues to speed up. We have to learn the value of time. And if we learn to appreciate the value of time and value every minute, then we can spend them with a purpose. And we can understand that we can allocate more time in life for what matters. And we have to evaluate and look at our lives and see, how are we wasting many of our minutes, many of our hours, and even maybe many of our days that God has given us? You see, we have a stewardship for our time. Just like we have a stewardship responsibility for our money and our possessions. So God has given us the stewardship of our time. Making the best use of our time is our responsibility. And so Jesus understood the value of time. Number two, Jesus prioritized his life and then disciplined himself accordingly. I want you to go to Mark chapter 1, verses 35 through 39. Mark chapter 1, in verse 35, notice what is said here. Jesus is going to rise very early in the morning while it is still dark. He departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed. So his priority was spend time with my Father. But it's a busy day. He's got a lot of things that he needs to get done today. So in order to make sure he gets that priority in of praying and spending time with his Father, he rises early. Now, rising early requires discipline, doesn't it? He rose early, but then notice verse 36. Simon and those who were with him searched for him. When they found him, they said, "Everyone is looking for you." Now, all these people were looking for him because in the earlier verses, it said that he had healed many people in the previous days. They're wanting to be healed from him. And so all these people are wanting to find Jesus. But notice what Jesus does. Verse number 36 or verse 38. He said to them, "Let us go on to the next towns that I may preach there also, for that is why I've come." Jesus doesn't say, you know, "I've got a whole waiting room full of people ready to be healed. Let me get to them." No, he says, "It's not my purpose today. My purpose is to go to the next towns and preach, because that's why I've come, to preach." And so Jesus says, "Let's go on. Let's leave these folks behind. Let's go to the next town." We see in this short little story how Jesus had prioritized his life. His priorities were, "I'm going to spend time with my Father. I'm going to preach the gospel." Now, healing people worked for the purpose of preaching the gospel and confirming that in his message of compassion and love. But at this point, Jesus said, "I've got to be disciplined. And on this day, to get done what I need to get done with my priorities, I'm going to have to get up early so I can spend time with God. And I'm going to have to say no to a group of people who want to be healed. And I'm going to have to go on to my purpose for the reason I've come." You see, it's easy to prioritize our life. Most of us, if I were to ask you on a sheet of paper, "Give me your priorities," you could do that. When it is hard to discipline our life according to our priorities. You see, what happens is the urgent takes the pressure and the immediacy and takes our time. And so we know that, for example, we want to prioritize our marriage relationship. We want to prioritize parenting. But then we go to work, and the boss says, "Hey, I need you to do this." And we think that a project's only going to take an extra hour, and it takes an extra 4 hours. And so we end up spending more and more time on the urgent, and maybe even things that are important, but it's not really according to our priorities, is it? Or we want to spend time, our priority is God. We want to spend time with God. We want to read His Word. We want to pray. But the urgent things, maybe it's our home, maybe it's our work, maybe it's other things going on in our life, they take the immediate time, don't they? And what is required is discipline to say no, to say this is how I'm going to structure my life so that my time usage fits my priorities. I want you to listen as I read Proverbs 15:32. Anyone who ignores discipline despises himself, but whoever listens to correction acquires good sense. When we think about our life, as I said, I've often taught, we often have to choose who's going to be cheated. In other words, we cannot meet all the obligations that are out there. We have to choose who is going to get our time and who is not going to get our time. And so this applies to our recreation, to our internet, to our Facebook time, to TV, to our relationships with other people, to our work. All these things have to come in focus when we think about our priorities. They're not wrong in and of themselves unless they are taking away from what should be our top priorities. And so we have to prioritize our life. Most of us have done that. But where we fail, and this is what takes constant correction, is the discipline to say, this meets my priority. And I'm going to do this, and I'm not going to do that, because that is not my top priority. Number three, Jesus never put himself in situations where he was in a rush or in a hurry. Now, that one is going to be very difficult. And I'm not saying that it is sinful to be in a rush or be in a hurry. That's not the point of this. Don't misunderstand me. What I'm saying is, find the ministry of Jesus a time when he is rushed or hurried. Now, we see him very busy. But we always see, and it's amazing how Jesus is able to make time for the individuals and for those who are in need and for, here's the thing, for what he wanted to do that fit his priorities. In Mark chapter 10, verses 46 through 52, we see Jesus on this occasion going through Jericho. And when he's in Jericho, there was a great crowd there, and all these people were pressing on Jesus. And they're all, of course, wanting his attention, and they're wanting something from Jesus. But there was one man. We know him as blind Bartimaeus, who's going to yell out very loudly to Jesus. He's going to cry out, Jesus of Nazareth, Son of David, have mercy on me. And other people began to say, hey, be quiet, quit yelling like that. And they tried to rebuke him. And Bartimaeus wouldn't be quiet. And Jesus heard him. And he said, call him to me. And he asked him, what do you want me to do for you? And he said, of course, allow me to recover my sight. And Jesus would say, go your way. Your faith has made you well. And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. There's another story in Luke chapter 19. We know it about the wee little man who climbed up in a sycamore tree. Same thing. Hundreds of people. Big crowd. Jesus was there. And there was one man who climbed up in a sycamore tree. And Jesus, of course, Jesus knew everybody's situation. He knows this man's situation, doesn't he? And he knows that this man is one who has been involved in sin. And he's a publican and things. And he's taking money. And Jesus is going to focus on him. Jesus is going to go to his house. And of course, Zacchaeus repents and salvation comes to him. And Jesus says, the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. What was his priority? There was a lot of people there that day. Probably a lot of righteous, good people there. Probably a lot of other people. But Jesus focused on someone who needed to be saved. And he went to his house without an appointment. Had that meal, didn't he? You see, Jesus never put himself in situations where he was in a rush or hurry. I read about a story about a lady talking about a young girl. If you have a young girl, you may be able to identify with this. She said, when you're living a distracted life, every minute must be accounted for. You feel like you must be checking something off the list.
staring at a screen, rushing off to the next destination. No matter how many ways you divide your time and attention, no matter how many duties you try and multitask, there's never enough time to try to get caught up. That was my life, she says. This is a mother of two little girls. For two frantic years, my thoughts and actions were controlled by my electronic notifications, ringtones, and jam-packed agendas. Although every fiber of my inner drill sergeant wanted to be on time to every activity of my overcommitted schedule, I wasn't. You see, I had a six years ago, I was blessed with a laid-back, carefree, stop-and-smell-the-roses type of child. When you needed to be out the door, she was taking her sweet time picking out a purse and a glittery crown. When I needed to be somewhere 5 minutes ago, she insisted on buckling her stuffed animal in the car seat. When I needed to grab a quick lunch at Subway, she stopped to speak to the elderly woman who looked like her grandma. When I had 30 minutes to get in a run, she wanted to stop the stroller and pet every dog. When I had a full agenda that started at 6 a.m., she asked to crack the eggs and stir them very gently. She goes on and talks more about this. And of course, many of you that are parents can relate to that. Now, obviously, I think there has to be a balance there. You have to teach the child about discipline and about getting to places where you need to go. But I also think the parent has to learn as well, don't we? We have to learn that we can be so distracted with all of our busy agendas that we miss the old proverb, stopping and smelling the roses. And we miss out on the presence of the people we're around. And Jesus, the thing about Jesus' ministry, and I know he ministered in the first century context, so everybody probably didn't wear watches and things. In our world, in our culture, in a Western culture, is very different than that kind of culture where time wasn't of so valued. But maybe we can learn something from the Eastern culture. Maybe we can learn something from our Hispanic culture. And I know we get frustrated with some of that sometimes, that they are so carefree with time. But maybe we're too uptight with time at times, that we miss out on relationships. Jesus, you will not find him, at least I do not know of a reference, where he is neglecting others because he's in a hurry to get some agenda done. You see, Jesus makes time for those he's around. Number four, Jesus didn't let the expectations and agendas of others control his life. Look at Mark chapter 1 once again, verses 32 through 38. This is an interesting one. I've already talked in verses 32 about all those who were sick and demon-possessed, and how he had cast out these demons and all the things. And then the next morning, these people, many others, come to him because of the notoriety. Others come, and they're wanting to be healed. But Jesus says, we've got to go on to the other towns and preach. Verse 39, he went throughout all Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and casting out demons. In other words, I have to go to other places to minister to those cities and those sick there. But then I want you to look on down to chapter 6 of the book of Mark. Because in this occasion, not only does he deal with the sick and others, but also in chapter 6, he's going to have to deal with his family. Verse 30, the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that he had done and taught. And notice what Jesus says, verse 31. Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while. Jesus understood that there's a need for rest. They came and they told him all that they'd been doing and all the things that they had done in their preaching mission. Jesus said, let's go and rest. You see, in our life, we have to build in balance, don't we? Now, continue to look on down at this passage. But when they go to this other place, a group of multitude follow them over there, and a great crowd, verse 34, is assembled. And he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he's going to minister to them, and he's actually going to do the miracle where he heals them and is going to feed many of them. Continuing on down to verse 45 and 46.
Immediately he made his disciples get into a boat, go over to the other side of Bethsaida while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up on the mountain to pray. So Jesus, in this day, this very busy day, he says, come aside, let's rest. But then they are interrupted during that rest by a big multitude that need to be taught. He teaches them. The day gets long in his teaching that they get so hungry, the disciples say, let's just send them all away. Jesus says, no, let's meet their needs, let's feed them. Jesus is worn out at the end of the day. What does he do? Sends the disciples away to be alone in a boat, probably rest, be going to the other side. And Jesus goes up on a mountain to spend time with his Father. You see, Jesus lived in the present. He allowed himself to meet the needs of others, but he also maintained his priorities. He did not always allow the expectations of others or agendas of others to drive him and to control him in his life. We must find the balance, and I think this passage is a good passage, between loving and loving others and being controlled by the expectations of others. Once again, I don't have all the answers there. But in our relationships with family, in our relationships with others, we need to be in a relationship where we can have compassion for them, where we love them, and we meet mutual responsibilities for them. But we also have to understand that we can't allow them to control us and allow our life to be based upon their expectations and their agendas. But how many of us struggle in the sense of we allow our life to be controlled by what we think others believe we should be doing? And we allow our life to be set, we allow even our agendas, what we want to accomplish in life, by what others want us to be doing. You see, that's not having compassion. That's not living in a loving relationship. That's living in a controlled, manipulative relationship. Jesus did not allow the multitudes, he didn't allow his apostles, he didn't allow other people to control his agenda. Even if it meant, and this is kind of, we don't have to think, even if it meant leaving the sick people in one town to go to another town. Even if it meant leaving the demon-possessed people in one town to go to another town. Even if it meant telling, we've got to go aside and rest and take a break, even though there's still work to be done. Because Jesus knew he cannot allow other people to control his agenda and what's best for his life. That's a tough principle, but it's one that we need to apply in our lives. Number five, Jesus' personal goal in life was to please God. His main thing was to please God. In John chapter 8, 28 through 29, notice this. So Jesus said to them, When you have lifted up the Son of Man, then you shall know that I am He, and that I do nothing on my own authority, but speak just as the Father taught me. He who has sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always do the things that are pleasing to Him. My goal is to do what pleases Him. In fact, in 2 Corinthians 5, 9 and Colossians chapter 1, verse 10, Paul says that we should do whatever we do to please God. Now this is a challenge, because what we're saying is that our overall aim in life should be very simple. Matthew 22, 37. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. This is the target. This is the aim. This is the goal. Now I want to go to the last one because these are really connected. Jesus understood and he accepted the fact that not everyone would understand, accept, or support his purpose and choices. You see, when your aim is to please God, that's going to put you in contrast with most of the people in the world. And so, if you make it your number one goal to please God and to prioritize your life and to discipline your life based upon that, then many people are not going to understand. Now, I'll give you three examples here. In Luke 4, 18 through 32, the religious leaders and the multitudes did not understand. when Jesus preaches a message, they first are going to praise him. Those are wonderful things. And then he applies the message and he has to leave and they say, let's throw him off the hill. They don't like him anymore. In Mark chapter 5, I want to read this one, Mark chapter 5. His message is to his apostle, or to his mother and his brothers. Look at this in Mark 5, 20 through 35. This one goes with some of the other points as well. In Mark 5, he had just healed the demon-possessed man. And a great crowd is going to throng around him and try to be with him. That's the wrong reference, I believe. I'm not finding the reference I'm thinking. It should be Mark 3. Look to Mark 3. Mark 3, verse 20. Then he went home, and the crowd gathered again so that he could not even eat. And then when his family heard of it, they went out to seize him, for they were saying he's out of his mind. Think about that. His family is saying he's lost his mind. Now, Jesus continues to teach. He's going to deal with the blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. And then in verses 31 through 35, look at that. His mother and his brothers came and they stood outside and they sent to him and called him. Now, I want you to know something. I want you to think about this. If you're at a fish fellowship out here, or if you're in church service, and someone, one of the ushers comes up and says, hey, your mom is out there. Your brother is out there needing you. What are you going to do? You're going to get up and go, right? Because it's your mom, it's your brother, it's your family. Now what Jesus does here is pretty unique. Remember, Jesus knows they think he's out of his mind. He says, verse 33, when they tell him this, he answered, who are my mother and my brothers? He looked about those who sat around him and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of God, he is my brother, my sister, and my mother. And then in Matthew 16, Peter and the disciples are going to, Jesus says, I'm going to go be crucified. Peter says, hey, you're not going to go be crucified. That's not the way the plan goes. And Jesus says, calls him Satan. Get behind me, Satan, because you're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. Here's what we learn. When you prioritize your time in a way that pleases God, it's often going to make people around you say, I don't understand. Your family may say, hey, you shouldn't be using your time like that. Your friends and coworkers are going to say, hey, you shouldn't be using your time like that. People think it's crazy that you're here today. They think, why go to church every Sunday? I mean, I don't see how you fit in going to church. People think, they don't understand why you would go study the Bible on Wednesday night. People don't understand that stuff, do they? They don't understand why you'd come to work at a giveaway day ministry on a Saturday morning. And it may be your own family who doesn't understand the choices you're making. And here's what I want you to know. Jesus faced the same thing. His best friends didn't understand. His family didn't understand. And the religious leaders didn't understand. And so when you choose to prioritize your time, understand that not everybody's going to be supportive and agreeing and say, yeah, that's the best way you should use your time. And so you then apply that to what that means to you. How did Jesus manage time? I think Jesus managed his time by managing his life. Managing his life. In conclusion then, notice that Jesus understood the value of time. Jesus prioritized his life and disciplined it accordingly. He never put himself in situations where he was hurried and rushed. He didn't let expectations of others control him. He had as his personal goal to please God. And he recognized that when he chose to please God, that would often cause others to not understand and not support his use of his time. I hope this has been a blessing for your life, and I hope you'll think about it. If you're not a Christian, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, the greatest decision you can make is doing that. You need to hear the gospel, repent of your sins, confess Christ as Lord, and be buried with Christ in baptism. If you need to respond, come as together we stand and sing.